At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
This story starts with a question we don't ask nearly enough in true crime. Just because the public can see something, does that mean we should see something? That's the uncomfortable territory an Idaho judge stepped into this week in the aftermath of one of the most infamous cases that we've ever seen, the murders of four University of Idaho students by Brian Koberger. Second District Judge Megan Marshall issued a ruling that quietly but firmly drew a line. Some images, no matter how curious the public may be, are simply too devastating to release. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on this in the comments section. So let me know on YouTube what you think. Should we have a right to see these photos, these last images of these poor souls in their worst possible moment? I don't see the purpose. I could see it for someone like a Catherine Ramsland or a forensic psychologist or something of that nature that's trying to understand the case and these scenes for clinical reasons. But other than that, gawking because you have a YouTube channel or a podcast, no. I don't see why anyone should get access to scenes like this. But that's my thoughts. I am curious to hear yours and certainly open to other opinions and why. The decision came not with headlines or outrage, but with a kind of weary gravity. Marshall barred the release of certain crime scene photos taken in the aftermath of the 2022 killings, images that showed the bodies of the victims and the blood that surrounded them. She called them incredibly disturbing. She acknowledged the family's pleas to preserve what little privacy they had left. And she did something not many courts are willing to do anymore. She put dignity above curiosity. Brian Koberger, of course, is no longer awaiting trial. That chapter closed in July of 2025 when he was sentenced to life without parole after pleading guilty. No appeal, no chance of release. The court process had come to its legal end. And that's precisely when the public records request began to flood in, because once an investigation is closed in Idaho, the documents tied to it become subject to release under the state's Public Records Act. Reports, interviews, surveillance footage, police videos, and crime scene photos can be requested. The legal mechanism here is it's routine, but what's not routine is the emotional carnage those images carry with them. And in this case, what was at stake wasn't just information, it was the boundary between public interest and private grief. Moscow police had already started releasing some materials, carefully redacted videos, blurred images, documents with names removed, but then came the request for the full set of crime scene photos, unedited, uncensored, photos that showed Kaylee Gonzalez, Madison Mogan, Zanner Kernodle, and Ethan Chapin in their final moments. Photos that documented the brutal aftermath in graphic, clinical detail. Two families, those of Madison and Ethan, stepped in. They filed requests with the court asking that those photos remain sealed. Their argument was simple. Nothing of value is gained by sharing these images. But a great deal is lost. Grief, dignity, closure, the mental health of siblings and parents trying to put their lives back together. Judge Marshall agreed. In her ruling, she wrote, "There is little to be gained by the public in seeing the descendants' bodies in blood-soaked sheets, blood spatter, or other death scene depictions. But it has and will continue to have profound effects upon the descendants' loved ones." It's a powerful statement, not just legally, but culturally. Because in the era of Reddit threads, TikTok theories, and YouTube clickbait, images don't exist in isolation anymore. They get ripped from their context, overlaid with music, turned into thumbnails, reshaped endlessly. Once released, they can't be pulled back. They live forever. Not in the newsrooms or court archives, but in comment sections, shock sites, and algorithm-fed feeds. And this raises the bigger question. What is the public's right to know? It's not a rhetorical question. It's a constitutional one. The First Amendment protects access to government proceedings. Transparency is fundamental to a free society, although obviously that's being questioned at this moment in time. Courts have long recognized limits, especially when disclosure would cause substantial harm without serving a clear public benefit. In this case, Judge Marshall had to weigh that balance. Does releasing the most graphic crime scene photos actually help the public understand the case? Does it expose wrongdoing, serve oversight, correct misinformation? Her answer was no. And legally, she had every right to make that call. Idaho's Public Records Act does require disclosure once investigations close, but it also builds a critical exception. If releasing the records would constitute an unwarranted invasion of personal privacy, the court can intervene. And that's what happened here. The court didn't block the release of all images, just the ones that crossed the threshold from informative to invasive. And there's precedent for this. In 2004, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled the National Archives v. Favish that families of deceased individuals have a right to block the release of post-mortem images under the Freedom of Information Act. The court recognized what it called survivor privacy, a legal principle that says the traumas of family members matters in these decisions. And that ruling has been cited repeatedly in similar cases, especially involving victims of violent crime. The Ninth Circuit, whose jurisdiction includes Idaho, expanded on this in Marsh v. County of San Diego in 2008. That case involved the unauthorized release of autopsy photos by a medical examiner. The court didn't just cite privacy law, it recognized a constitutional right for families to control the images of their loved one's death. That right, the courts ruled, survives the person. It belongs to those left behind. So that ruling didn't come out of nowhere. It sits on firm legal ground. But more than that, it reflects a shift in how courts are beginning to respond to the explosion of digital media and true crime culture. Not every record belongs on the internet. Not every truth requires a photo to be understood. Because let's be honest, when people ask to see these images, what are they really hoping to learn? The facts of the Koberger case are not in dispute. The evidence was overwhelming. DNA, cell phone records, security camera footage, a white Hyundai Elantra spotted fleeing the scene, a knife sheath left behind with Koberger's DNA on the snap. He was arrested in December of 22, indicted in May of 23, and sentenced in July of 25, after entering a guilty plea to avoid the death penalty. Four lives lost, one man convicted, the house demolished in December of 23. The case has been dissected in court filings, law enforcement briefings, and hundreds of hours of expert analysis. There's nothing the public could learn from a photo of Kaylee's body that isn't already known through documented, legitimate reporting. So when people say they want to see the truth, what they often mean is they want to feel it, gawk at it, to own it. And that's not journalism. That's exploitation. It's worth pointing out here, the judge didn't deny the existence of public interest in government transparency. In fact, she reinforced it, allowing many records to be released with redactions. That includes videos of officers and witnesses at the scene, documents tracing the investigative process, even surveillance footage. Those are tools of accountability. They show what police did, how they responded, how the crime was discovered and handled. With the graphic photos, they don't advance that goal. The trial is over. The investigation is closed. There's no misconduct allegation tied to the redacted images. No claim that the police failed to document the scene. No suggestion that the cover-up occurred. In short, there's no reason to need those specific photos unless you're looking for shock, spectacle, or worse. That's why the legal pros of release kind of crumble under scrutiny, at least in my opinion. Again, you're entitled to yours. The families, however, face real measurable harm. They live with the knowledge that their children's final moments could be posted online, dissected in comments threads, viewed by strangers thousands of times. The internet has a long memory and a short attention span. What gets posted today can haunt families for decades. Every job interview, every holiday, every search result. For survivors, that fear isn't that someone will forget. It's that they'll never be allowed to. We've seen this play out in other cases after the helicopter crash that killed Kobe Bryant. First responders shared graphic crash site photos on their personal devices, and they circulated. They leaked. And Vanessa Bryant, Kobe's widow, sued. The court awarded her $28.85 million. Why? Because the trauma of having to worry about those photos, who had them, who might release them, was real. It was constant, and it was unnecessary. Florida passed a law after the Dale Earnhardt crash, sealing his autopsy photos. California passed another law after the Bryant case, criminalizing unauthorized image sharing by public employees at crime scenes. These aren't outliers. They're a reckoning with the modern reality that digital images don't die when a case ends. In the true crime world, we say we care about the victims, that we tell these stories to honor them. But when we start demanding access to their deaths uncensored, on demand, it becomes clear who we're really centering. And it's not them. The line Judge Marshall drew matters not just in Idaho, but across the board. It's a recognition that transparency is not about total visibility. It's about accountability. And those two things are not always the same. This case is closed. The man who committed these murders is serving life behind bars. The police have released detailed reports, timelines, videos. Investigators have answered questions. The press has done its job. The public has been informed. There is no unfinished business left in a photograph of a crime scene, only pain. And that pain has a face. It looks like a mother trying to explain to her youngest why strangers on YouTube keep posting pictures of their sister. It looks like a father wondering if the next Google alert will contain something too awful to show his wife. It looks like a family just trying to grieve without the internet dragging them back into a nightmare. We can honor the public's right to know without forgetting the private right to mourn. We can demand transparency without indulging in trauma. And in the end, we don't need to see the worst thing to do the right thing. Give me your thoughts in the comments section. And wherever you are listening or watching, press subscribe, please. We cover tons of cases here. We'd love for you to join us as we discuss and break them down every single day. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn. announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paul Azan, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Mr. Monopoly here. Monopoly is back at McDonald's. Register in the McDonald's app so you're ready to
get your bag.
Two ways to peel for a chance to
get your bag.
Physical peels with select items and digital peels with others to
get your bag.
Play Monopoly at McDonald's.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
No purchase necessary. See rules at playatmcd.com for full details and amoe.playatmcd.com to play without purchase. Ends November 23rd, but bonus play ends November 2nd. Monopoly is a registered trademark of Hasbro. Copyright McDonald's.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts. Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there, True Crime Podcast fans. It's Patrick and Jillian from True Crime Obsessed.
Each week on TCO, we recap a true crime documentary everyone's talking about, and we do it with heart, sass, and just the right amount of humor.
So if you like the kind of podcast where two good friends chat about a case in a thoughtful way that centers the victims, you really gotta check us out.
Yeah, we cover the well-known cases that you hear about in the news and the underreported cases that desperately need more attention.
For almost 9 years, we've been one of the most popular true crime podcasts out there.
We have over 30,000 five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts, and our brand new YouTube channel has over 50,000 subscribers watching our full-length video episodes too.
So find and subscribe True Crime Obsessed wherever you get your podcasts.